Remember, get checked, get fit, get moving. And remember to get some rest to boost your immune system. And Doc?
Protect yourself and others by staying home, and please wear masks when you go outside. Remember, health is a human right.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Is your organization planning a virtual event? Looking for a media co-sponsorship? Then contact KBOO today. KBOO's community media co-sponsorships provide free on-air promos for local nonprofits and small organizations, as well as a listing on our website's community calendar and promotions on our social media. For more information and to apply, visit kboo.fm/co-sponsorships today.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio, of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm your host, Stephen Siegel, here with co-host Rachel Haynes. Hey, Rachel. We are broadcasting around the world from Portland, Oregon. Both of us are public school teachers, and we host every second Monday of the month, where we typically interview educators and talk about what's going on in their schools and in their unions. And joining us today on a Zoom call, we have four guests. I think this is our record, Rachel. We have Byung Yu, Karen Liao, David Skolton, and Alicia Chavez, all from PAT, all from Portland. Welcome, everybody.
Thank you.
So start out by each of us just tell us just briefly about your teaching background and experience.
This is Karen. After college, I taught 2 years of kindergarten in Trenton, New Jersey. I went to grad school and was a graduate student instructor in ethnic studies and Asian American studies classes. And then I took a break from education. And then 4 years ago came back, and I've been teaching fourth grade and second grade at Grout in PPS.
All right, I'll jump in. This is David Skolton here. I taught overseas. My first experience teaching was overseas in Japan. I taught in the public middle schools there for about 5 years. And then I came back to the United States. I got my teaching license here and I've been teaching in PPS at Abernathy Elementary School as a fifth grade teacher for the last 5 years.
Hey, I'll go next. My name is Byung Yu, and I taught in the Dominican Republic for a year as a fifth grade teacher. And then I moved on to Rosa Parks and have been teaching there ever since. I've been there for 7 years now, and yeah, it's been great.
Hi, everybody. Alicia Chavez here. I use she, her, Aya pronouns. I started my career as I ran an after-school program for adults with disabilities. And then I moved, and this is in the Bay Area, and then I moved up here to Portland, and I went to grad school, and I've been teaching K-2 intensive skills at Atkins Elementary for about 6 years now.
Great. Well, welcome again, everybody. And tell us also, what inspired you to become a teacher? We always like our listeners to hear that.
This is Karen again. So there are two things that inspired me to be a teacher. The first one, I identify as Taiwanese American. And the first thing is that a lot of teachers told me, no, you're not Taiwanese, you're Chinese. So this invalidating erasure of my identity and experience is something that I don't want any other students to ever experience. And the other thing is, in high school, I had an Asian American woman PE teacher who was also a coach for some of the after-school sports that I did. And seeing her as a teacher, someone who looked like me, inspired me to teach too.
This is David. My original motivation is so much different than what it is now. So I'll be honest about my original inspiration was, I just was lost in life, and I came to a career late. I was just trying to figure out what is something I could be good at and get paid for. I've always loved kids. And so I just, I wanted to get in the classroom. But since being around so many incredible educators at Portland Public Schools, I just, my focus is, and motivation has really shifted to realize that education can be a place where we do work for social justice. And so that's really become my motivation as I've gotten more and more into the work.
This is Byung. I worked at a home for boys just getting out of college, and I was a counselor over there, and then I ended up being a weekend manager, and it was a super stressful job working with youth there. And I just thought, with the amount of responsibilities I had, it would be nice to find something for my career long-term and find something that pays a little bit better as well, that can help me support my own family. So.
Yeah, and mine was a little bit like Karen's too. When I was growing up, I identify as Chicana, biracial. I'm also white. And I didn't have teachers who looked like me. And I wanted to change that for our students now. And another thing is that I've always been a huge disability justice advocate. And I wanted to get into teaching kids with disabilities really young, and kind of teaching them independence and teaching them how to, stand up for themselves. So yeah, that's why I got into that.
Great. So you're all members of Portland Association of Teachers. Can you tell us about your involvement in the union?
This is Karen, and this is my first year being a rep, so it's a lot of it is new to me, but it's a great way to connect with people who share your ideas and can organize. You can organize with, and I'm learning a lot about organizing from the people around me.
And just so our listeners know, because sometimes they hear rep and they think they mean like a staff person. So, so Karen's talking about a building representative. So she-
Yeah, I'm the building rep for my building too, the representative to the union. And I want to give Karen props for being also on the racial equity committee, right? I sit on the social justice committee, which Alicia chairs. So I'm involved in those two. Oh, and also I think Karen and I both sit on the instructional practices. There's a D there. I don't know what that D stands for. I always get lost on that, but we sit on another commission that looks to bring issues of educational, fairness to PPS administration.
My experience with the union has been, this is my second year being a lead rep, and as well as being on the racial equity committee, and then being a zone organizer for around 9 to 10 schools within our union. And then this is my first year running for an executive board position as well. So,
yes,
And I am PAT secretary, and I'm also the chair of the Social Justice and Community Outreach Committee. I've been building rep for my specific school. I think this is my fifth year, but I've also had various roles throughout the union, zone organizer, part of the OEA Representative Assembly.
Great. So you four have spearheaded a grassroots organizing campaign against MAPS testing during distance learning. Can you talk about what your concerns are with this form of testing happening right now during distance learning?
And again, I would say probably for our listeners, we're not talking about being tested on being able to read a map. You might want to say a little bit about what that testing is.
I'll jump in and set the table, and then maybe just talk about the 3 points in our letter, and you guys can fill out the other three can fill out the holes. So MAP testing is a standardized test that's computer adaptive, meaning that when students get a question right, the questions get harder, and when they get a question wrong, the questions get easier. So the test is designed so that kids get about 50% of the questions wrong to find their level in both reading and math. And we our objections to the test centered around three main categories. One is that standardized tests always tend to show that students of color perform worse than they're actually capable of. It's racially biased in that way. The second thing is that there would be a lot of lost instructional time, which is really important during this environment when we're in CDL, when we're in comprehensive distance learning. And then the third thing is, and probably just the most obvious, is that the data that would be received during in a distance setting would be unreliable, because kids would not be in what's called a secure browser. They could open up other tabs, and kids' home environments would be so radically different. So that's kind of the main, I don't know if you want to jump in and fill in some of the holes there.
Yeah, sure. I think this organizing movement is that, you know, within my own building, I've been one of the testing site coordinators in the past, and typically in a traditional setting, you know, we'll spend weeks or months on standardized testing within our building, and we often test our students more within the schools that are Title I schools or the schools with a majority minority population. And so when we first learned that we were going to be testing in PPS during a distance learning setting, it didn't really seem feasible because we have so many kids with Wi-Fi issues and low budget $200 Chromebooks that don't work very well. And then usually when I'm teaching a class, typically, you know, a lot of my students have several siblings and they're all crammed in a small apartment. And so just even the feasibility of being able to do this test, it seems not really practical at all, just because when my students unmute their microphones, a lot of time all I hear is a bunch of screaming or the TV blaring or all the things that don't provide for a good testing environment. And with that being said, like, that is a racial inequity, the unreliable data that we're probably going to get from that, and the loss of instruction that we as educators spend on these tests is time away from being able to teach the students the things that we want to teach them in schools. So.
And I'll speak a little bit about, so the school that I teach at is a dual language immersion school, a DLI school. So kindergarten through fifth grade are learning Spanish over different percentages, depending on what grade they're in. And normally when we are in the brick and mortar classroom, a student would have to take both languages. So a student would have to take Spanish if they're in the DLI Spanish program, and then they would have to take English so that you could see both languages, the data from both languages, since they're learning two languages. And what is difficult is that takes a lot of time, because not only are they having to take it in English, they're also taking it in Spanish, so it's a lot of lost instruction. And to speak for like the SPED world is right now during CDL, we don't like you don't have controlled environments. So if a student has accommodations of like a quiet place, you can't provide that. You know, some families are, you know, their kids are learning from their kitchens because that's all they have, or their living rooms, and so you can't really provide it. So you're actually breaking IEPs because you can't accommodate the home environment.
As a second grade teacher, I'm not required to administer the test this time, but it's something that I have done before, last year and the year before for second grade. And even when you tell students, you know, the reason you're getting things wrong is because you're doing so well, but when the questions get harder, they still get upset. And there are, you know, countless stories from many educators of second graders, fifth graders, you know, middle schoolers winding up in tears because of the test. And now is not the time to put more emotional strain on our students.
You know, I was thinking about the successful school survey that PPS puts out every year. So Portland Public Schools, we're scheduled to do it next week. And every single classroom has to take this thing called the successful school survey. And they're basically surveying kids to see what their experience of school is, whether they feel like they belong, how they feel like their teacher treats them, all this stuff. So, and we know that every single year, the data is aggregated by race. And we know that kids, that BIPOC students are more likely to have a less positive feeling about school. I mean, just we already know this information. And so when we take a test like this, where kids are getting 50% of the questions wrong, and it's a pretty challenging test, and it's rigorous, it's a long test too, we already know that because these kids come in with a negative attitude towards school, it's going to affect those BIPOC kids more than it is the white kids who already feel like they're accepted by the system. So that's another way that the test racially kind of impacts communities of color more than it does, you know, white communities.
Yeah, I was just kind of thinking on that and just kind of picking back off what David said. Like when PPS kind of does a standardized test, they do it to all the schools that are under the umbrella of PPS. So what might seem to work for a well-to-do community with a student that has a high-end laptop and parent support and a really good Wi-Fi connection, like, isn't the same situation for like a school like mine. Like at our school is 95% free and reduced lunch, and so like a lot of our students are living in poverty, or a lot of our students have a lot of social emotional issues that they are working through or working with, and just adding this test on at this time is a really big barrier to the routines that we've established as teachers within our own classrooms, and super disruptive. So
this is the district that is mandating these tests. This is not a statewide test, is that correct?
Correct. Yeah. It's district mandated, and it isn't tied to any Title I funds like say a Smarter Balance test would be, that we're now applying for a waiver for. It's just within the district. Yeah.
So can you talk about what you're doing to fight back and to get the word out? We've used the word campaign, but haven't yet heard about what it is that you're doing or trying to do.
So I can explain a little bit about that, and then everybody else can fill in. So right now, is it 12 schools or is it 13 now?
16.
Ooh, 16 schools have sent.
16 in the last couple days, yeah.
Nice. So 16 out of, I think there's 80 schools in Portland Public have sent letters of opposition to our superintendent and school board, and also some other leadership within PPS. There has also been some parent organizing as well, who have sent letters or started change.org campaigns. And I think the change.org is at about 400 people have signed on to that. And it's basically listing, the letters are listing the inequities of maps that we have talked about in the previous question. And I don't think any of us have, I haven't received any anything back from anyone that I've sent letters to, but most schools are at 100%, like all of the staff agrees to the opposition of maps during CDO.
Yeah, and it dates back to the fall, where four schools we drafted a letter with a bunch of colleagues, about 10 people drafted a letter, and four schools wrote in letters to PPS and they canceled the map test for the fall term. So we were especially surprised when winter came around and they were deciding that they were gonna go ahead and administer it when they had canceled it, saying that our concerns were valid. So that was kind of shocking too. But then, so in the winter, we just kind of, we started with that letter, that form letter, and we, approached schools and said, will you see what your educators think about this test? And if there is opposition to it, here's the way you could go about voicing that.
Can you speak a little to what the district is saying, why they say that this test is necessary, why they decided to give it, and what your response is to that?
Yeah, the district standpoint is that they've already paid for this test and that they don't have a baseline or a data point to go off of to see the learning loss from CDL. Fortunately, like, it doesn't really matter what the data point is because the results are unreliable, because we can't tell how many of our students are Googling answers in another tab or getting parent support. Or aren't successful on this test because they don't have the proper supports for testing. And so that's kind of a moot point to begin with, that they need a data point, because what's the point of data if it's busy work to begin with? It's just a waste of instruction time for our students.
They want to use the test, just like Byung said, and they also want to use it as a way to plan supports. So some schools will have summer programs is what they're saying, or in the fall, if like there's low tests, like they're low scores in reading, like they want to have supports or curriculum that would help the students to get back to, you know, grade level reading.
But what's really interesting is like what PPS plans to do with the data is different depending on who PPS is talking to. So when PPS is talking to parents, they're saying things like, this data will help your teacher design future lesson plans. That was an email that just went out to our families at my school from our principal, which was a copy and paste from a district directive. So the district sent my principal an email saying that, send this out to your families. Getting the map data is going to help your teacher design future lessons. So we had to write back to our parents and say, actually, we use end of the unit assessments and in-class, data for that. So that's not really true. But in the back channels, PPS is talking to PAT leadership and saying what we're really going to use it for is reentry plans. So there's a couple different, ways that they're talking about that, but they're not being upfront with parents.
No, in fact, just to further elaborate on that, the district has said that they would communicate to parents and has told educators and our teachers union that they sent out communication to parents that they could opt out of this test, when in fact that hasn't happened at all. And parents haven't received an email from the district saying that they have the option to opt out. I mean, for our school community, that doesn't really make much of a difference because like there are so many language barriers within our community, maybe parents that don't speak English or speak another language. And even if it's translated in their language, they can't necessarily maybe read it or write it. And so they might not understand that they can opt out their students right now from this test. And so that just further goes to highlight some of the inequities that we're facing. One thing we've been organizing around as we're hoping for a systemic change from this grassroots movement is getting the district to switch from an opt out into an opt in, where the district will you know, ask that parents that want to take this test need to contact the schools, otherwise students aren't automatically enrolled in taking tests like these.
That's great. So I'm curious, you've talked about how the district has responded so far, or maybe hasn't responded in some cases. They talk about needing a data point, I think was what you said. But do you have a sense for sort of another agenda that they have, sort of a more hidden agenda, or do you feel like more like they've actually drank the Kool-Aid, so to speak, and actually believe what they're saying?
I mean, I have, oh, Alicia, go ahead. Alicia, you're kind of our bridge to the admin world. I would love to hear what you have to say about that. But I've got some theories too, but they're just within my own head.
Yeah, I mean, my theory is that they spent this money on this test and they don't want to let that go to waste. And I think that they're going to try to use the data that CDL is failing. And that would be a reason why we need to reopen, even though it's not safe to do so.
I was thinking more along the lines of, okay, we know that our theory in CDL, in comprehensive distance learning, is that the test, you lose instruction time, it's racially biased, and the data is unreliable. Actually, all of those things are equally true in brick and mortar when we go back to school. They're just not as true. It's just exacerbated with CDL. So I'm wondering if PPS is like, if we give in and say that they don't have to take this test now, then when we get back into schools, they're going to resist even harder knowing that they won. And they don't want to take a loss on this, knowing that it could lead to, you know, future opposition.
Yeah, I was also going to speak to, I mean, I feel like PPS kind of has a narrow view, and maybe they want to use this data to say CDL is not working. But one thing that we're not really measuring right now is how much growth we've had from our students on computers and laptops. Like the amount of full sentences I see in the chat boxes right now and the ability of my students to navigate different platforms is incredible. I've never seen that before when we've been in a brick and mortar setting. And so I almost think also like we're testing the wrong things right now. If what the students have been learning to do right now is have, you know, navigate platforms, and we've been focusing a lot on social emotional growth in our classrooms, like some of those things that we don't measure, like figuring out how to measure them, because those are important things in our schools. And it's one thing that the district is making an argument for, that, you know, we need schools right now because kids need to be back because they're failing. And it just kind of highlights, you know, all the other things we do as teachers besides assessments. You know, we're tech support, we're counselors. I could list off a ton of different things that we do as teachers. So,
do you also think that that there's just a general lack of trust in teachers' professionalism, that we know how to assess our students, we know how to make decisions based on what they need because we're with them every day and we see what they can do? I mean, do you think that plays into this whole sort of tight grip on standardized testing that we've seen for the last 30 years or so?
Yeah, but if we want to, that's probably, I imagine that's another show, because, I mean, if we start going down the road of our teachers trusted to give assessments, then we start to go down the road of standardized tests in general and looking at, like, what kind of data is valued in our educational system. Is this, because standardized tests are put forth as objective points of data, when in fact we know that they're written by human beings and we know that they're racially biased. And then teachers are like, you know, are put out to society as, well, we can't really trust them because they have bias. So there's a bias in the teacher, so we can't trust them to do a formal assessment. But there's not a bias in the test because it's objective. So there's all these assumptions we have about, you know, what kind of assessment is truly valid. And that, I think, plays big time into, this distrust of teachers.
Well,
yeah. I was just going to add on to that. I mean, we've had 16 schools that say they oppose. So obviously there's a mistrust of teachers right now because you're hearing from whole schools and communities of the reasons why they don't want to subject their students to this test. And the district is not sending back responses to teachers. You're hearing from parents. We've had several different PTAs around the district, you know, oppose this testing as well. And parents aren't getting much of a response from the district as well. So it's, I think it's really a matter of the district kind of digging their heels in right now. And even if the points are valid, continuing on.
So unfortunately, we have to stop the conversation, but it sounds like this might be part one. And maybe we could have you on again to talk about standardized testing in general. That'd be an
interesting conversation. Yeah, I'd love to.
All right. Well, thank you so much, David, Karen, Byung, and Alicia for joining us on KBOO. Thank you to Jamie Partridge for helping us convert this to a radio-ready file. Thank you, audience, for tuning in tonight. Thank you, Stephen, my co-host. This is Rachel Haynes. You've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 to catch another Labor Radio show.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Thanks for listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM in the Portland metro area, and all over the world at kboo.fm.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime, and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can all